For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin Jefferson is boring, and I am absolutely okay with it. If you have not watched any of the Netflix show Receiver, which admittedly I did not realize was out yet until I heard Pete, you on with Vinita Sarkar on Friday, about, and I'm like, I got to start watching this. So we did yesterday. My son and I watched it. We learned some new words that I would hope that he doesn't repeat, but that's a documentary. That's the way it goes. What were your early impressions of this show, which follows, I believe, is it five different wide receivers and tight ends? Because I think it's Jefferson, it's Devontae Adams, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Mm-hmm. There's
Debo Samuel.
Samuel, and then George Kittle, which is it's just so interesting. What were your original – what have your thoughts been on this?
I it's interesting. I came away with – similar to you, I found JJ to be very different than I expected just because he's so colorful, right, with the chains and the teeth and all of the different things that he's got. But he just felt a little different, I thought. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just right. that he seemed almost more passive, more, you know, something. But – then and you see Devontae Adams, and wow, if you came away with the same feeling I got, I've always liked him, right? I liked him with the Packers. I thought he was a great receiver. He and Aaron Rodgers were phenomenal together for a long, long time, and then he got the opportunity to go back and play with his college quarterback from Fresno State when he was with the Raiders, who's now moved on, Derek Carr. But he felt a little bit selfish to me, to be honest with you. That's what I didn't like. Everything was about... hey, look, it's not, and he said this multiple times, it's not about wins and losses. What's important to me is my own greatness. And I'm like, wow, even if you believe that, do you say that? Do you really say that?
Yeah.
And I don't know that he's even saying that the right way. I think I think he means something a little bit different than what it came out, but he said it multiple times. That's what bothered me. But St. Brown, first of all, I never realized how shredded that guy is physically. I mean, that guy
was a two-time, Mr. Universe? I didn't realize that.
Yep. His dad's an unbelievable bodybuilder back in the day. And this guy and his brother, who happens to play for the Chicago Bears, who's much, much bigger and an incredible-looking guy himself physically. But the talent in that family is incredible. George Kittle stands out. He is the reason you watch that, in my opinion, receiver. I mean, he's colorful, and it goes back to something I've been talking about for a lot of years now, which is the University of Iowa might as well be called Tight End U. I mean, they have put – I think I read that Kirk Ferentz has got something close to 20 tight ends who have been drafted out of Iowa in his career as a coach or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's some outrageous number. And of those guys – George Kittle, at least as of right now, is amazing. He's physical, yet he's thin. He's almost a receiver, but he's not. I don't know that he's a unbelievable blocker, but there were a lot of footage of him playing last year where he looked pretty physical, even though he's pretty thin. I'll tell you what you want to invest in is any kids that he and his wife have.
Right, because she's the basketball player there.
She's like 6 foot tall. She's a beautiful lady. They're both athletic beyond words. And you know, with his personality reflected, you know, in children someday, I think it could be pretty amazing.
Well, look at Chad Greenway and his wife. His wife was a track star at Iowa, and their daughter, Madden Greenway, is probably going to be one of the best women's basketball players in college very soon.
I've heard so many good things about what she's done. By the way, shout out to a friend of mine, Norris Wilson, played offensive tackle with me at the University of Minnesota. His kids are doing phenomenally well as well. He's got two daughters that are basketball complete studs that are going to be playing, you know, somewhere someday. One of them's already down at Vanderbilt. I think the other one's gotten recruited by the University of Minnesota and others. And then he's got a son who plays offensive tackle at Kent State. So he's doing a lot of things right. He and his wife, who was an amazing basketball player at UConn back in the day. But Deebo Samuel, how fun is that guy?
He is fun.
I like his personality, his persona. How about you? What was your takeaways from this thing?
Well, I like you. I kind of loved it. We were all watching it yesterday, and you know, Justin Jefferson's mom stocking him up on candy. Of course, my wife's like, "Oh, that's so sweet." You know, his mom is there, his candy. I love his family support that he gets. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that he's boring is the way to call it, right? And what I really loved about him is he has his two personas, which I personally I love that, because when he's on the field, he's a different – he said, I'm a different person. I'm Jets when I'm on the field. Mm-hmm. When I'm off the field, I'm just Justin Jefferson. But when I get on the field and I put the chains on – also, I don't know how you can play football with chains, but the scene where he takes his chain off and chucks it, and I'm like, that's a $5,000 chain he's just – or
at
however
least,
much it is.
At least.
He's just throwing it. So I like his persona. I like how important it is to him to have that mental box where he puts himself in, so that he, you know, I talked about the play in one game where he reaches, and instead of it being a touchdown, it's a touchback for them. I think that was Philly, and it makes a huge difference. And he carries that with him, but he has his two personas, and I think that's healthy when you can compartmentalize in athletics. To me, that's always a good sign. I love George Kittle too. I think he's incredible. His personality is great. The one thing I took away of all of it, and I want to say it was the beginning of the third episode, when they talk about how violent it is to play that position.
Yeah.
Where you don't have any time. You catch the ball, you get hit. And my son and I were watching it. We're going, oh, ooh, I mean, these guys, almost every catch they make, they're in a vulnerable position every time, and they're just getting run over. So it's to me, I think that's what I took away of it, is that it's just such a violent position, because you see the catches from 200 feet up, and you don't see the fact that they have a split second before they're going to get run over, and they hold on to that ball.
Yeah,
which is amazing to me. I would be dead if I forget, holding onto the ball. The other question I took away that was one I wanted to talk about real quick with you, and I looked it up. It's a chicken and egg thing for me. Is Justin Jefferson, was he great because of Kirk Cousins, or was Kirk Cousins better because of Justin Jefferson?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to find that out this year one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
So Justin Jefferson, 38 catches, 561 yards, and two touchdowns in six games without Kirk Cousins. Now, it's a larger sample size. But Kirk Cousins without Justin Jefferson, granted, it's the numbers are less because it was only three games. So I don't think but I look at quarterback rating. Without Justin Jefferson, his quarterback rating's a 107. With him, it's 99. Again, larger sample size. Yeah. But I think that's one thing. When I walked away, I'm like, I want to find out this year. Did Justin Jefferson make Kirk Cousins, or did Kirk Cousins make Justin Jefferson? Or are both of them better with each other, and then we're going to see this year that maybe they both needed each other?
I think I don't know that they necessarily need each other. I would say this. Justin Jefferson's the one who's got a lot more cut out in terms of who's the quarterback, who's throwing him the football this year, right? Because it's not going to be Kirk Cousins. And we already know that. But I think Kirk Cousins down there, he's got receivers. So we will find out if Kirk is as good as he has been the last couple of years with Justin as his receiver. The other thing you were talking about, though, Dave, yes, it is a physical game, and I think that's the most intriguing part of this whole thing when they do these series, is whether it's Hard Knocks or quarterbacks last year or receivers this year, people get the opportunity to see football is violent, and it's incredible, and every play something seems to happen, and there is a lot of contact, and it's why these guys get paid like they do. And I say it all the time, because the payment's a lot, but it also takes a lot out of you physically, mentally, and probably shortens the lives of a lot of people because of all the hitting that goes on.
I think what I landed on was, back to the Kirk Cousins, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
What I landed on was, I think Justin Jefferson's ability changed the way Kirk Cousins plays quarterback, and it made him better. Because if you remember a few years ago, it was about Cousins would only make the safe throw. And you know, we're all like, just let Justin Jefferson make a play. Just trust the kid's going to make a play, or Adam Thielen, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think Kirk Cousins changed the way he played. And he started doing that in the last season or two here in Minnesota. He started letting him make plays, and I think that's going to carry him. Like you said, they have a ton of receiver talent down in Atlanta. We could keep going with this, but we're excited next. We're going to have Simeon Wood Richardson join us from the Minnesota Twins. They play their final game of the first half today. He'll join us from San Francisco. That's coming up next. Listen to The Huddle on 830 WC.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
DCL. Eleven 21 on this beautiful Sunday morning. It is gorgeous outside. Get out and take advantage of it. Awaiting our next guest, hitting the stylesfinancial.com talking text line 651-461-9226. We talked earlier in the show about Byron Buxton, whether you want him to be smart and pull back, or whether you're willing to let him go 110% all the time and risk missing him for a few games this year. Texter says, Buxton is an incredible five-star talent, and given how he plays at full throttle, even if he can only play 100 to 120 games a year, he still provides an enormous value to the Twins. Even at this number of games, his wins above replacement easily covers his salary. How many times has he played 120 games? I don't even know if he's played that much.
Yeah,
I don't have those that number right in front of me, but I that might be interesting. Regarding the home run derby, I don't think that the issue is who participates and who doesn't. Rather, the issue overall is who cares. Many would say, and I'm among them, it's a competition that's outlived its draw to fans.
I don't agree.
Well, this is interesting, and I'll make this point to this texter's point. I wouldn't say it's outlived its draw. However, baseball was much, let's say this the right way, in the 90s, 2000s, it was all about the home run, and that's what everybody wanted to see. But now, baseball's become more of a scientific game, and we can enjoy a good pitching performance, or, you know, we can enjoy the guys in the outfield, that so much so that the home run derby isn't the only thing that isn't the only thing that draws the casual fan into baseball anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I will say this though. I think that, you know, it's been going on so long, Dave, that it's like the slam dunk. I mean, do people care about some of those other things? Maybe not, yeah. But they want to see that.
Excited now to have Simeon Wood Richardson joining us for the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Simeon, good morning. Thanks for joining us. A nice win for you.
Good morning.
A nice pitching outing. Good morning. I know it's early out there, too, so thank you. I appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the pitching performance the other day. It's a good one for you, including getting through some really long at-bats, and I'm curious, when you have these long at-bats from a pitching perspective, what is your mindset as you go through? Because I feel like the longer you stay in it, the more strategic and more tactical you have to be about what you're throwing.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think when those long at-bats happen, I think it's more not trying to do too much, especially as the count progresses and maybe it's 3-2 and you don't want to be too perfect. But you also don't want to give in into the hitter. So it's like finding the balance of still throwing your pitch and not giving in.
Simeon, so far, have you been pretty excited about, obviously, the experience and your youth and everything else, but going to all the various parks around? Is there somewhere that you've had the opportunity to pitch where you really have always looked forward to that?
I mean, not necessarily, because every day I come into work, it's my dream job. So every day at the ballpark is a dream come true for me. So going to the ballpark every day, traveling with the guys, being in the dugouts, watching how the team operates, all that is a huge part into who I am and the baseball player, because I love the game of baseball. So I wouldn't say there's a particular part, because every day I walk in, there's something exciting with my dream job.
Simeon Wood Richardson is our guest on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Simeon, you're 23 years old, and I know that you talk a lot about your youth. What is the benefit of being a young guy and one of the youngest guys on a staff when you're in a room with guys who do have a lot more experience as well?
I think it allows you to be a fly on the wall. It allows you to sit back and be quiet and just listen with both ears. And you have one mouth for a reason and two ears for a reason. So sit back and listen. And these guys are here for a reason. And they have so much experience and knowledge. And the best I can do is be a sponge and learn day to day from these guys and just kind of go underneath their wings and just kind of follow them.
Simeon, when you sit there and as part of the team, it's so different than from our perspective. And we hear a lot about, well, should there be anything ahead of the trade deadline? Is there a position? Do we need something else with the Twins? Is there anywhere right now that you would say, you know what, that does make some sense? We might need to make a change here and maybe do something ahead of the trade deadline.
That's not my role right now. My role right now is to continue to help the ball club win and just give them a fighting chance to win. My job is to be one of these guys who they can rely on and trust. And just like all these other guys in the dugout and on the field, we try to give our team the best chance to win. So right now we're playing really good baseball. We're having quality at bats. We're pitching the ball really well. We're just playing really good baseball. So right now I'm just focused on playing really good baseball with my team.
Simeon, you have been involved in some trades. When you come to a new franchise, it's happened to you a couple times now.
I'm sorry. I think I lost you.
I think we both did. Peter, you still there?
I'm still here.
Pete, you want to continue on? I think perfect. We lost the connection to Dave there for a second.
Simeon, one of the things that we have seen a little bit recently is some injuries, especially with a lot of the different players, and obviously that's something very important. We need to be as healthy as we can be. Are you a little bit surprised, and are the injuries something we should be concerned about right now?
I honestly think it's a part of the game. We dedicate our whole lives to doing what we love, and we live or die on the field. And it's one of those things where when those people go down, it's almost like a warrior going down or a fallen soldier, because no one sees how much time and effort and work you put into this game to go throw those pitches for everybody to see or hit those homers for everybody to see. So I think it's part of the game. I think the Twins do a really good job of trying to keep our guys healthy on a day-to-day basis. As far as being recovering and just focusing on the training room, like that's our main priority right now. But I think it's one of those things where it's part of the game where you live and die on the field.
Simeon, it also seemed – or go ahead, Dave.
Oh, I was just going to say, you said something earlier that I loved, where you have one mouth and two ears for a reason. Is there somebody in that bullpen that you have talked to that you feel like, boy, I'm really grateful that I get to learn from this person and someone who's taught you some things already?
I honestly try to connect with every one of my guys from rotation down to the bullpen, because we're all one unit. So if I can get much information and knowledge from my guys as possible and get familiar with my guys, knowing, okay, you didn't sleep well at 3 o'clock in the morning. No one else knows that, but I do, but we're going to get through it together. And just listening to them, realizing that these guys have been here way longer than me, so I can just sit back and watch and study and watch how these guys operate. So I'd say I'd pick everybody's brain, honestly, even from our hitters. I pick everybody's brain. I love being a sponge, man. So just picking each other's brains, sitting back and watching everybody's work ethic, it's pretty special to watch.
Simeon, you've been doing an absolutely phenomenal job pitching, and it's been exciting for a lot of the fans, and everybody's always looking at the pitchers because it's such a focal point. But you've really been on a roll. Is there anything specific that you would attribute to the fact of how well you've been doing of late?
I'd say I just try to do my job as best I can. It may sound vanilla, but it's doing my job the best I can do and giving my team the best chance to win. If I know if I can control those two things, that recipe for success is pretty good.
Dave?
Yeah,
boy, did we lose Dave again?
Yeah,
sorry about that.
Again. I think, Simeon, thanks so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate you coming
on
with us. And,
thank you guys
and
for having me.
Thank you, Simeon. Great to have you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a quick break and come back. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO.
Ah, GNR.
Could Notre Dame join the Big 12? A lot of talk about that over the past, well, let's be honest, they've been talking about it for a while. Pete, I guess to me, I wonder what the advantage is for Notre Dame. You already have all your games nationally televised, and you have that yourself. And I don't know how long the NBC deal runs with Notre Dame off the top of my head, but you have this to yourself. I would almost argue they transcend college football as a thing of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this stage by themselves. And now with the way things are, they can, you know, conceivably still even compete for a national championship if they had a good enough season. What's the advantage? What am I missing? What's the advantage of joining the Big 12?
As you know, they're kind of loosely tied with the ACC right now. And they play a lot of the ACC teams, which, by the way, that's changing dramatically as well,
right?
Potentially. No, this is all speculation, of course, but you're already looking at a Big 12. You know, it's funny, we talk about the SEC all the time. We talk about the Big 10, of course. Pac-12 no longer exists, but people kind of forget sometimes about the Big 12 and how big the Big 12 has become. 16 teams. They've added quite a bit over the last little bit. This year we got Utah, Arizona State, Colorado. So you've got Neon Deion coming back. He's going to have to play against Big 12. And does that mean that Florida State, maybe, Clemson, maybe, Notre Dame, maybe? There's private equity involved in this whole thing as well. And that's some of the funding that a lot of people are pointing to right now that makes the Big 12 pretty interesting. So there's just a lot, Dave, that I think that we're unpacking when it comes to the movement of conferences and how they are in these super conferences that are being created. It's going to be interesting. We have it right in front of ourselves right now with the Big Ten, right? We've got Washington, we've got Oregon, we've got USC, we've got UCLA. It's really an environment where things are changing. And if you look at these television contracts, it's absolutely gotten to the next level.
Yeah.
I mean, the Big Ten presently, I think it's a 7-year, $8 billion deal with Fox, CBS, and NBC when you put it all together. It's incredible what this has really turned into over the last, just maybe the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say at this point, Florida State wants out of the ACC.
Yes.
They've made that very clear to everybody involved. If Florida State's out, I feel like Clemson's probably out because that's, you know, there's not much going on there anymore. If Florida State and Clemson leave, Notre Dame, I don't see happening at this point. It just doesn't make sense. Dave, I agree with every point that you were making. They already have all their games on national television. Notre Dame feels independent or Big Ten. I can't see any other scenario than that for Notre Dame going forward. All the other schools, eh, maybe. There's still another round of realignment going on.
I just, like, if you look, the Big 12, Baylor, Central Florida, BYU, Cincy, Houston, like, that's not a great schedule to boost your RPI on. It's just, your strength of schedule on. I don't see it for Notre Dame unless it was, I mean, a Big Ten, maybe an SEC. I could see that being it, but I just, this is so crazy. These everyone moving around and all of this, this conference realignment. And I mean, I don't want to say it's good or bad for college sports because it's not, to me, it's not as big of a deal as some other things, but it's really weird eventually, this is going to be, I think, this is going to mark a time that we're going to look back to and say, this is kind of the standard here where we kind of lost some of these great college football rivalries.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to play into it, but not right now. In 5 or 10 years, when there's not the allegiance to your school and, you know, no matter what, Texas, in Texas, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you beat Oklahoma, right? Like that's it. But these rivalries and this kind of attachment to your school is going to have repercussions, not just in fandom, but the athletes that you're going to get, because they don't, you know, in Texas, Pete, you know this, in Texas, in Louisiana, in Arkansas, in Florida, like these kids, they grow up and they want to go to their school because that's the school that they love. That's the one, that's the rivalry. And they hate that other school. They will never go there. This is going to go away, I think, over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, if it hasn't already.
Well, the realignment and the number, the sheer number of teams, that's the one frustration I've had through this whole process is building these super conferences where you've got 16 schools playing, right? I mean, that means there's no way you could possibly play against all of the competition. That sort of bothers me. That was the one thing that always you looked forward to, right? You're going to play Michigan, either home or away. You're going to play Ohio State, home or away. That's just the way it was. And now all of a sudden you've got a conference like the ACC that we were just kicking around some ideas. Mm-hmm. And you got Cal Berkeley, you got Stanford, really? Yeah. And then what, right? I mean, then what if you do lose Florida State and Clemson and whomever else maybe decides to make a move? What happens to that ACC? And it does that change the TV deal significantly because of some of those that are removed? There's just a lot going on in college sports right now. There's absolutely no doubt about it. The financing that's going on, the media coverage that's absolutely incredible, and it's something that everybody's reaching for. But there is going to be some negativity that comes from some of this, I would think. And I can understand the idea of Notre Dame maybe wanting to do something, but they don't have to. To Charlie's point, they don't have to do anything. They still have what they have, but that might change too, guys, to be honest with you. We'll see how that plays out over time as well.
Very, very interesting. What's going to go on with all this and the timeline and where it goes. When you look at these, when the schools do, Pete, when they switch conferences like this, I mean, is it... Does it make you think? I mean, I guess to me, it's like, all right, well, if you switched once or twice, what's going to stop you from doing it again? I would assume they lock up these long contracts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to get in for at least a certain number of years. And it's just, you've said it, it all goes back to money. And I can't help but wonder what the long-term viability, and it'll always be there. College sports will always be there. Mm-hmm. But this isn't a good thing. I don't think so. I mean, there's what's the positive to all this money and private equity and everything that's being juiced into college football other than to make the schools and athletes more money?
Yeah. It has really gone to that direction of it's all about finances. It's all about the money. It's all about what can the school do to be able to get that much more? And it's, you know, you look at the SEC right now, and I look at it's pieced together pretty interestingly. I think that Oklahoma and Texas actually fit in there pretty well, to be honest with you. But we are just seeing a little bit too much of this. I mean, it's you're just putting your suitcase in your hand and you're moving from one to the other. And to your point, How long is it going to last? Well, are they going to be there the next 6 or 8 years? Probably. The contracts are probably to some extent that type of length. But then what? And where are we going? I mean, I still like the idea, if you're going to have all these conferences, let's have conferences where you have to somehow compete against each other. And at this point in time, that's just an impossibility, because I don't think you can add that many more games to it. We're already talking about 12 plus games when it comes to all of the playoff type games and the bowls and all the rest of it. I don't know, Dave. It is really changing in a really dramatic fashion.
Before we step aside to a break, Pete, I do want to ask you really quickly, since we're talking about football, Monty Kiffin passing away this week.
Yeah,
reading a bit, and I know that you played for him correctly, correct? And clearly a football genius, right? I mean, you develop one of the architects of the Tampa 2 defense. I mean, like it's a brilliant thing. What was it like to play for him, and what was your relationship like with him?
Well, the greatest thing about Monty Kiffin is just such a unique individual, right? I mean, you have coaches, all these coaches have personality. There's no doubt about it, but Monty was special. Monty was a guy that he just had a certain way about him that everybody loved him, and anybody who ever played for him. I mean, the guy's born and raised in Nebraska. He was a Husker. He was a two-way player back when people were two-way players back in the late 50s, early 60s. But he coached with Devaney. He coached with Coach Osborne. He was a special guy. And then he was with the Vikings. That's where I crossed paths with him. I think Lane Kiffin might have been one of our ball boys.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, GNR.
Could Notre Dame join the Big 12? A lot of talk about that. Over the past, well, let's be honest, they've been talking about it for a while. Pete, I guess to me, I wonder what the advantage is for Notre Dame. You already have all your games nationally televised, and you have that yourself. And I don't know how long the NBC deal runs with Notre Dame off the top of my head, but you have this to yourself. I would almost argue they transcend college football as a thing of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this stage by themselves. And now with the way things are, they can, you know, conceivably still even compete for a national championship if they had a good enough season. What's the advantage? What am I missing? What's the advantage of joining the Big 12?
They're kind of loosely tied with the ACC right now. And they play a lot of the ACC teams, which, by the way, that's changing dramatically as well,
right?
Potentially. No, this is all speculation, of course, but you're already looking at a Big 12. You know, it's funny, we talk about the SEC all the time. We talk about the Big 10, of course. Pac-12 no longer exists, but people kind of forget sometimes about the Big 12 and how big the Big 12 has become. 16 teams. They've added quite a bit over the last little bit. This year we got Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado. So you've got Neon Deion coming back. He's going to have to play against Big 12. And does that mean that Florida State, maybe, Clemson, maybe, Notre Dame, maybe, There's private equity involved in this whole thing as well. And that's some of the funding that, that a lot of people are pointing to right now that makes the Big 12 pretty interesting. So there's just a lot, Dave, that I think that we're unpacking when it comes to the movement of conferences and how they are in these super conferences that are being created. It's going to be interesting. We have it right in front of ourselves right now with the Big Ten, right? We've got Washington, we've got Oregon, we've got USC, we've got UCLA. It's really an environment where things are changing. And if you look at these television contracts, it's absolutely gotten to the next level. Yeah. I mean, the Big Ten presently, I think it's a 7-year, $8 billion deal with Fox, CBS, and NBC when you put it all together. It's incredible what this has really turned into over the last just maybe the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say at this point, Florida State wants out of the ACC. Yes. They've made that very clear to everybody involved. If Florida State's out, I feel like Clemson's probably out because that's, mm-hmm. you know, there's not much going on there anymore if Florida State and Clemson leave. Notre Dame I don't see happening at this point. It just doesn't make sense. Dave, I agree with every point that you were making. They already have all their games on national television. Notre Dame feels independent or Big Ten. I can't see any other scenario than that for Notre Dame going forward. All the other schools, maybe. There's still another round of realignment going on.
I just, like, if you look, the Big 12, Baylor, Central Florida, BYU, Cincy, Houston, like, that's not a great schedule to boost your RPI on. It's just, your strength of schedule on. I don't see it for Notre Dame unless it was, a Big Ten, maybe an SEC. I could see that being it, but this is so crazy. Everyone moving around and all of this, this conference realignment, and I don't want to say it's good or bad for college sports because it's not, to me, it's not as big of a deal as some other things, but it's really weird how, and this is going to be, I think, this is going to mark a time that we're going to look back to and say, this is kind of the standard here where we kind of lost some of these great college football rivalries.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to play into it, but not right now. In 5 or 10 years, when there's not the allegiance to your school, and no matter what, Texas, in Texas, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you beat Oklahoma, right? Like that's it. But these rivalries and this kind of attachment to your school is going to have repercussions, not just in fandom, but the athletes that you're going to get, because they don't, in Texas, Pete, in Texas, in Louisiana, in Arkansas, in Florida, like these kids, they grow up and they want to go to their school because that's the school that they love. That's the one, that's the rivalry. And they hate that other school. They will never go there. This is going to go away, I think, over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, if it hasn't already.
Well, the realignment and the sheer number of teams, that's the one frustration I've had through this whole process is building these super conferences where you've got 16 schools playing, right? I mean, that means there's no way you could possibly play against all of the competition. That sort of bothers me. That was the one thing that always you looked forward to, right? You're going to play Michigan, either home or away. You're going to play Ohio State, home or away. That's just the way it was. And now all of a sudden you've got a conference like the ACC that we were just kicking around some ideas. Mm-hmm. And you got Cal Berkeley, you got Stanford, really? Yeah. And then what, right? I mean, then what if you do lose Florida State and Clemson and whomever else maybe decides to make a move? What happens to that ACC? And does that change the TV deal significantly because of some of those that are removed? There's just a lot going on in college sports right now. There's absolutely no doubt about it. The financing that's going on, the media coverage that's absolutely incredible, and it's something that everybody's reaching for. But there is going to be some negativity that comes from some of this, I would think. And I can understand the idea of Notre Dame maybe wanting to do something, but they don't have to. To Charlie's point, they don't have to do anything. They still have what they have, but that might change too, guys, to be honest with you. We'll see how that plays out over time as well.
Very, very interesting. What's going to go on with all this and the timeline and where it goes. When you look at these, when the schools do, Pete, when they switch conferences like this, I mean, is it, does it make you, I mean, I guess to me it's like, all right, well, if you switched once or twice, what's going to stop you from doing it again? Like, I would assume they lock up these long contracts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to get in for at least a certain number of years. And it's just, you've said it, it all goes back to money. And I can't help but wonder what the long-term viability, and it'll always be there. College sports will always be there. Hmm. But this isn't a good thing. I don't think so. I mean, there's what's the positive to all this money and private equity and everything that's being juiced into college football other than to make the schools and athletes more money?
Yeah. It has really gone to that direction of it's all about finances. It's all about the money. It's all about what can the school do to be able to get that much more? And mm-hmm. it's, you know, you look at the SEC right now, and I look at it, it's pieced together pretty interestingly. I think that Oklahoma and Texas actually fit in there pretty well, to be honest with you. But mm-hmm. we are just seeing a little bit too much of this. I mean, it's you're just putting your suitcase in your hand and you're moving from one to the other. And to your point, how long is it going to last? Well, are they going to be there the next 6 or 8 years? Probably. The mm-hmm. contracts are probably to some extent that type of length. But then what? And where are we going? I mean, I still like the idea, if you're going to have all these conferences, let's have conferences where you have to somehow compete against each other. And yeah. at this point in time, that's just an impossibility because I don't think you can add that many more games to it. We're already talking about 12 plus games when it comes to all of the playoff type games and the bowls and all the rest of it. I don't know, Dave. It is really changing in a really dramatic fashion.
Before we step aside to a break, Pete, I do want to ask you really quickly, since we're talking about football, Monty Kiffin yeah. passing away this week.
Yeah,
reading a bit, and I know that you played for him correctly mm-hmm. and clearly a football genius, right? I mean, you develop. One of the architects of the Tampa 2 defense. I mean, like, yep. it's a brilliant thing. What was it like to play for him, and what was your relationship like with him?
Well, the greatest thing about Monty Kiffin is just such a unique individual, right? I mean, you have coaches. All these coaches have personality. There's no doubt about it. But Monty was special. Monty was a guy that he just had a certain way about him that everybody loved him and anybody who ever played for him. I mean, the guy's born and raised in Nebraska. He was a Husker. He was a two-way player back when people were two-way players back in the late 50s, early 60s. But he coached with Devaney. He coached with Coach Osborne. He was a special guy. And then he was with the Vikings. That's where I crossed paths with him. I think mm-hmm. Lane Kiffin might have been one of our ball boys at one point.
I think he was.
And it's, but you're to your point about the Tampa 2 defense, that's just an incredible thing that he really did. He was the architect of that. And all it really ends up being, folks that don't understand it, you're a two deep defense, but with a middle linebacker who has the opportunity, if you're in that spot, to actually drop back and make it three players back there mm-hmm. deep. But
which
the
in
way
the 80s
you shift
and 90s
around,
almost never happened. I mean, like, that's crazy to think about doing that.
Yeah,
as a
nobody
linebacker.
Does that. Right. Nobody, but if you had athletic, fast, good linebackers like Tampa did, it mm-hmm. really worked well. And I'll tell you, Monty was just a special guy, fun guy, always entertaining. I have stories that I can't ever tell on radio that are just phenomenal about that guy. But one of my favorite things, sitting in a restaurant in Lincoln, Nebraska, I'm sitting right next to Coach was there, which was really great. I mean, always fun to be around Coach Osborne. But right behind his shoulder, I'm looking and I go, gosh, is that Monty Kiffin in that picture behind you here? And we're in a steakhouse, and sure enough, it was. Just a fun guy, and he was a guy that I know will be missed. 84 years old, but he had a great run and an unbelievable coach.
The list of players that he really made the careers of, you know, Warren Sapp, John yep. Lynch, Rondé Barber, Simeon Rice, mm-hmm. Derek Brooks. I mean. And all those guys were going to be great anyway. But when you think of, like, really, they're all Hall of Famers. I mean, that's yeah. incredible to coach that many Hall of Famers.
And he was putting them into the position to do what yeah. they were able to do. I mean, so that a lot of people say, well, they'd be great anywhere. Maybe. But sometimes a coach knows how to use you even better. And I think yeah. Derek Brooks is the easiest example of that. he made him from being a really great guy to a Hall of Famer. And, yeah. You know, he did that with a lot of people. Scott Studwell, a lot of different linebackers over the years.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on Monty Kiffin, who passed away this week. We'll take a quick break, come back, put a wrap on the show. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. Levin 51 on this Sunday morning. Don't forget to adjust your calendars accordingly. Twins at the Giants today. That is a 3:05 first pitch. Chris Paddock going for the Twins. Blake Snell for the San Francisco Giants. Blake Snell, who's 0-3 to start the year with a 7.85 ERA. I was kind of surprised.
It's the reigning Cy Young winner.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a pretty crazy start for the.
I mean, all of his numbers were fake last year. They were all of the peripherals. You looked at all of that stuff. That's why nobody would give him a contract. Everybody's like, man, I don't know.
Somebody did. Now look. And for once, it wasn't us, so that's good. NFC, Fox Sports had an article this week on the over-under for wins totals for the NFL teams. Mm-hmm. Thought we would run through these. We can at least, with the time that we have left, Pete, the NFC North, the over-under for different wins, and I'm curious what you think. So it has the Lions with the most wins in the NFC North this year. They have the line at 10.5, so 10.5 wins. Would you go over or under on that?
I'm going to go over, and the reason being, I just think that they've added enough, and they haven't really lost much. So I look at the Detroit Lions as somebody that should, and I think will, lead this year. I think the quarterback had a great year last year. I think he has another great year. I love the coach. I think he's done a magnificent job. And the defense was something that needed to be shored up a little bit more, and I think they've done that. So I would actually take that over.
They're on the rise, man. Yeah. I would absolutely take the over on that one. Yeah. They have Green Bay finishing second, 9.5 wins, over, under.
You know, everybody's
excited. Now, you have to be analytical. No fandom here.
Well, you know, everybody got so excited about the quarterback and the fact that he finally showed that he was a little bit different than he had looked as the quarterback. And so if that continues, yeah, this is a team that I think could easily have a 10-game type winning season. I don't know that they can do it over again or not. I really don't. I look at this team. I think that they had a lot of good breaks last year. This one, I'd actually stick with the under, though. I mean, I could see 10, but I think they win 8 or 9.
This is where it got interesting for me, that they had the Chicago Bears at 8.5 wins.
Yes.
Over, under. What would you say? I know how I feel about this. What do you think?
I just think it's difficult when you've got a quarterback who's a first-year quarterback, no matter how good he is. It's still there's a reason why they were in position for this pick and everything else. I know it was some trades and everything, but I just think that they have improved, but I don't think they've improved to the level where they're going to win 9 games. I don't see it. And so for that reason, I would be on the underside.
I'm with you. I'm still very skeptical on what Caleb Williams is going to do, especially it's so rare that a quarterback who's the top pick and then starting game one really, really makes a huge difference because, as you said, and you're right, there's so many other things that have to be done to that team because that's where they were last year. They were at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So is one quarterback who's never played a down in the NFL going to make a huge difference? I would say I'm with you. I think 8.5 wins is a bit much. I would take the under. The Vikings are the Vikings at the bottom of the NFC North. 7.5 wins, Pete. Over or under? Go ahead.
The tough thing, I think, for the Vikings is going to be how do they play the quarterback position? I know that we've had a lot of discussions about that. Everybody's kicked around. What are they going to do? Should you start JJ? Should you let him come in 5 games, 6 games in if there's a struggle going on? Do they want to really do that? And again, I think the world of him. I think he's proven to be the quarterback that deserved to be picked where he was picked. And given the fact that we have a healthy offensive line, I'm okay with him. I would tell you this. I am not impressed with our starting quarterback. I think that the opportunity for JJ to step in there could be great. And with that, I think the Vikings probably do better than seven games this year. And so because of that, I look at that and I say, well, do they get to eight? I think they could get the eight. I think they could even get a little bit higher than that. My biggest concern and continues to be is our defensive side. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive side has a lot of those elements. And Hockenson's got to be healthy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's healthy, JJ's healthy, I think that that makes a quarterback look a heck of a lot better pretty fast.
Those defensive additions, though, this offseason, they've looked great. Yeah. I mean, lot of big names.
Yep. Yep.
I like the defense. I think, because I was looking at them like 7.5, and I'm going through the schedule, I'm like, actually, no, I count 7 wins and maybe an eighth. You know, I mean, I'm looking at like week 16, Seattle. They're going to be sitting on 7 wins. Is that their eighth? You know, at Seattle. I don't know. We're just around the corner, guys.
It's almost here.
We're
man.
Just around the corner. NFL season almost here. Great show today, fellas. Thank you so much. Thanks to Simeon Wood Richardson who joined us in the first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check out our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday. Levin 51 on this Sunday morning. Don't forget to adjust your calendars accordingly. Twins at the Giants today. That is a 3:05 first pitch. Chris Paddock going for the Twins. Blake Snell for the San Francisco Giants. Blake Snell, who's 0-3 to start the year with a 7.85 ERA. I was kind of surprised.
It's the reigning Cy Young winner.
Yeah, I mean, like that's a pretty crazy start for the.
I mean, all of his numbers were fake last year. They were all of the peripherals. You looked at all of that stuff. That's why nobody would give him a contract. Everybody's like, man, I don't know.
Somebody did. Now look. And for once, it wasn't us, so that's good. NFC, Fox Sports had an article this week on the over-under for wins totals for the NFL teams. Mm-hmm. Thought we would run through these. We can at least, with the time that we have left, Pete, the NFC North, the over-under for different wins, and I'm curious what you think. So it has the Lions with the most wins in the NFC North this year. They have the line at 10.5, so 10.5 wins. Would you go over or under on that?
I'm going to go over, and the reason being, I just think that they've added enough and they haven't really lost much. So I look at the Detroit Lions as somebody that should, and I think will lead this year. I think the quarterback had a great year last year. I think he has another great year. I love the coach. I think he's done a magnificent job. And the defense was something that needed to be shored up a little bit more. And I think they've done that. So I would actually take that over.
They're on the rise, man.
Yeah.
I would absolutely take the over on that one.
Yeah.
They have Green Bay finishing second, 9.5 wins, over, under.
You know, everybody's
excited.
Now,
you have to be analytical. No fandom here.
Well, you know, everybody got so excited about the quarterback and the fact that he finally showed that he was a little bit different than he had looked as the quarterback. And so if that continues, yeah, this is a team that I think could easily have a 10-game type winning season. I don't know that they can do it over again or not. I really don't. I look at this team. I think that they had a lot of good breaks last year. This one, I'd actually stick with the under, though. I mean, I could see 10, but I think they win 8 or 9.
This is where it got interesting for me, that they had the Chicago Bears at 8.5 wins.
Yes.
Over, under. What would you say? I know how I feel about this. What do you think?
I just think it's difficult when you've got a quarterback who's a first-year quarterback, no matter how good he is, it's still there's a reason why they were in position for this pick and everything else. I know it was some trades and everything, but I just think that they have improved, but I don't think they've improved to the level where they're going to win 9 games. I don't see it. And so for that reason, I would be on the underside.
I'm with you. I'm still very skeptical on what Caleb Williams is going to do, especially it's so rare that a quarterback who's the top pick and then starting game one really, really makes a huge difference. Because, as you said, and you're right, there's so many other things that have to be done to that team, because that's where they were last year. They were at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So is one quarterback who's never played a down in the NFL going to make a huge difference? So I would say I'm with you. I think 8.5 wins is a bit much. I would take the under. The Vikings they're the Vikings at the bottom of the NFC North. 7.5 wins, Pete. Over or under? Go ahead.
The tough thing, I think, for the Vikings is going to be, how do they play the quarterback position? I know that we've had a lot of discussions about that. Everybody's kicked around. What are they going to do? Should you start JJ? Should you let him come in 5 games, 6 games in if there's a struggle going on? Do they want to really do that? And again, I think the world of him. I think he's proven to be the quarterback that deserved to be picked where he was picked. And given the fact that we have a healthy offensive line, I'm okay with him. I would tell you this. I am not impressed with our starting quarterback. I think that the opportunity for JJ to step in there could be great. And with that, I think the Vikings probably do better than 7 games this year. And so because of that, I look at that and I say, well, do they get to 8? I think they could get the 8. I think they could even get a little bit higher than that. My biggest concern, and continues to be, is our defensive side. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive side has a lot of those elements. And Hockenson's got to be healthy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's healthy, JJ's healthy, I think that that makes a quarterback look a heck of a lot better pretty fast.
Those defensive additions, though, this offseason, they've looked great. Yeah. I mean, lot of big names.
Yep. Yep.
I like the defense. I think, because I was looking at like 7.5, and I'm going through the schedule. I'm like, actually, no, I count 7 wins and maybe an 8th. You know, I mean, I'm looking at like week 16, Seattle. They're going to be sitting on 7 wins. Is that their 8th? You know, at Seattle. I don't know. We're just around the corner, guys.
It's almost here.
We're
man.
Just around the corner. NFL season almost here. Great show today, fellas. Thank you so much. Thanks to Simeon Wood Richardson, who joined us in the first hour. If you missed it, make sure you check out our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.